Real Estate Journeys, episode 90. Let's get it! Me on the top, man, I won't stop. Me on the top, man, I won't stop. Me on the top, man, I won't stop. Yo. What's going on, everybody? This is your boy, Matty B, a.k.a. Matt Balto. Welcome back to Real Estate Journeys, the exclusive podcast for real estate investors looking to scale to 100 units and live that location-independent lifestyle. And today's guest, I'm excited to bring on. I know we've talked about Airbnb before and trying to get to 100 units, whether that's through condos or short-term rentals. But we have on an extended Airbnb rentals, which I'm excited to bring on today's guest. His name is Al Williamson. Al is a professional engineer, full-time real estate investor, and the author of several real estate books. He began investing in 1996. Al is best known for publicly documenting his quest to create enough secondary income streams to cover the first mortgage of his 8-unit apartment building, which he accomplished in September 2015. Al's also a great family man who's now spending his time in Sacramento, California. With that said, Al, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, thank you. I'm happy to be here. This place is great.
Yeah. Glad to have you on.
This place is great. Thanks for being on the show. Yeah. Thanks for letting me on the show, man.
Yeah. No, happy you're here. So Al, for the people that are unfamiliar with you, can you give us a little bit more of your background of real estate, how you got into it?
Oh, absolutely. It was in 96, way back then. I don't even know if you were born back then, man. Were you born then? Back in 96.
Yeah. I was like, when is 96? What is 96? I was like,
1996. Yeah. So I was getting ready to get married, and I was at a church picnic, uh-huh. And an older gentleman pulled me aside and said, "You guys should get into a duplex and not buy a single family home. You know, start, early version of the house hacking was known as." So that got me started. I was at the library. That's like pre-internet, basically. I was at the library reading, and I kept reading until things started to repeat themselves, you know, started looping back. Okay, I read that. I know that. I guess I know enough to do this. And I got a threeplex, and I pushed my new bride into the smallest unit, the threeplex, and we lived there. So that really started it off, and it was off to a good start. She was complaining. Year two, she started complaining, and then year four, the whole thing quadrupled in value. And she said she knew it all along. she knew it'd be great all along. Yeah.
Nice. And you said that was 96?
96. Yeah. We took the 96 and then we kept going from there. But that got us hooked and helped us give us enough time to figure out this whole landlording thing. And you can't be too nice figuring that out and making our mistakes and scaling up from there.
What's the biggest horror story you've had thus far as a landlord?
A biggest horror story was a friend of mine said his mom, who was retired, needed a place. And so I said, all right. She had a good retirement from a utility company. So I move her in and then she moves. Then I find out she's addicted to crack. Like she's a crackhead. I'm like, oh my God. And they started dealing out of, you know, cut a hole in my back screen and start dealing drugs out of it. Her friends would come over. So I had to, I rented her a U-Haul. I paid for a deposit somewhere else. I brought over boxes and moved her out. Yeah. That was it. I always buy my way out. I never evict anybody.
You just buy them out, huh?
I just buy them out faster. Yeah.
There you go. So how did you start coming into short-term rentals, Airbnb, and this extended what do you call it, the extended stay?
Yes. I do. Some people call me the father of the extended stay Airbnb because one thing you forgot to mention in my intro is I'm the world's first landlord scientist.
Does that say that in your bio?
I got to make sure it says that because I test out things on my eight unit building and I test out different things and this different product.
Where is this unit?
It's Sacramento, California. Yeah, okay. 8 units in Sacramento. It's a eightplex. So it's kind of my laboratory. So that's what I do. If I can find a product that's going to potentially save landlords money, I test it out. or if it's going to make landlords money, I test it out. So at the time I was working for a consulting company, engineering, and I was doing some work in San Francisco, and I had a housing allowance. So long story short, my lease at the place I was staying in San Francisco ran out, and I needed a place to stay for 3 months. And this is back in 2012. And Airbnb was just kind of gaining his legs back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I started Airbnb-ing all around San Francisco in 2012. And I was like, man, this is incredible. But it was still kind of a bed and breakfast type of thing. A lot of customer service to the guest. Until 2015, Airbnb came out with a business travel ready category. And it was just for people who weren't not sharing their homes, which to me, that said landlords, you know, people who a dedicated unit just for business travelers. I'm like, okay, I can get behind this now. So I set up one of my eight units as a business travel place. And that led me to doing some experiments of I did like three stays per month, and that was really, really good, but really good, really good. And then I did a 1 month stay, and I looked at the numbers, and the net incomes were about the same as the three times a month. You know, it was a whole lot less stressful, less fatigue. So then I aimed for 3 months at a time, and I got those bookings. There's a big demand for that in the area. And I realized since I could spread my expenses, my startup time, my efforts of getting started and cleaning and everything over 3 months, which meant my cost per month went down and my net income went up. So I was like, this is even, my net income was even higher than doing three stays per month by doing these extended stays. Mm-hmm. And that's been proven. So that's all I do now is the most. It's not best for your gross, but it's best for your net. And hotel industry is finding out the same. That's why there's so many extended stay hotels out there now. They realize that they make more money housing one guy for 30 days, you know, than getting 30 guys in at one day. There's more damage getting 30 guys in to stay for one night overnight, and more staffing and everything needed for doing those short stays. They make more money if they house one guy for 30 days. So you see a big old movement towards that.
Now, can you clarify for me what would classify as an extended stay? Would it be anything over 14 days, 7 days, 3 days? Like, what's considered an extended stay?
Well, these hotels, they consider, they think it's, you know, a couple weeks to 2 months, they will call it there. But, a lot of city ordinances here in the States, they'll classify short-term rentals as 30 days and less. And I came up with this term mid-term rentals, which means 30 days and longer, but not a year. And that's what I kind of focus on is anything over 30 days. That's how I define extended stays or mid-term rentals.
Mm-hmm. And so obviously when you're targeting this niche, I don't want to back it up. So your eight unit, what is that? A B class property? Is that an A class or what kind of?
It started off as a C because I was the headquarters of a prostitution and the gang activity on the block. And that's when I bought the property. And I spent a lot of time working on the neighborhood and kind of knitting the other people on the block together, communicating. There's a whole book on that called I wrote called Building Wealth with Inner City Rentals.
Mm-hmm.
And then turned it into a B neighborhood because we were able to clean it all up. And that's where it is now. It's like it's now in one of the trendiest areas in Sacramento now.
Very cool.
It's evolved, yeah.
Mm. And so when you're targeting the extended stays, is there anything as far as I'll say staging the unit is concerned that you notice more, I'll say, business clientele or extended clientele prefer as opposed to a, maybe a shorter term rental?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, you're on my topic, so there's a lot to unpack here, because people doing these extended stays, they're either traveling, and I focus on business travel only. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't do the tourist thing. And these business travelers, they're traveling for either to make more profit or for savings. Like if you're a consultant, self-employed, you're going to be trying to find an affordable, you're looking for savings on your stay. And if you're an employee and you have a housing allowance, then you're going to be looking to pocket the difference of your, you know, your housing allowance. So they have different motivations. And also, if you're going to extend a stay, a short-term rental, a short rental, you don't really need a washer and dryer, you know. But if you can stay for 2 months, you want a washer and dryer in your unit. So there's different things like that. People working night shifts, say emergency room, say healthcare professional. Well, you know, like blackout curtains make or everything. So there's all kinds of different things depending on who you're going for and what they want, and making sure you have what they want and not necessarily things that are extra, because that'll putting your own personality into it doesn't necessarily help your net income. and also your client doesn't really care about it either. So you got to be careful about pinpointing that if you're aiming to maximize your net income.
Now, when people are looking to, or if they're potentially thinking of converting to an extended stay Airbnb, is there like an area that you find more better as far as investing? Like if you're around the central business district, or you can be on the outskirts of the MSA within 15, 20 miles, does that matter? Or do you find other areas better for this than certain pockets of the city?
You know, I always take people through a six-step process through that. They figure it out. Like a lot of times my my students, they'll say, hey, I don't know. And I'm like, well, first, you know, for my process, to make it really simple, what you do is you see if there's an extended stay hotel nearby. And they're like, well, why? And I'm like, well, those guys have already done the research. You know, it's kind of like you see a mom and pop coffee shop going really good. You see Starbucks just sets up down the street, right? So that's what I recommend people do is that if you have an extended stay hotel, one that has especially a national brand like Residence Inn, Extended Stay America, or different national brands, then that thing costs $22 million to set up. You know, they've done the research already. You don't really need to question it or anything. You just go.
How do you how do you know where to set the market rents for, or how did you just basically piggyback and copy off of them?
Yeah, you beat them. That's what you do. You undercut them. You already know there's a business there. You undercut them and give their clients more. So it's a win.
And what would you say like the vacancy rate on this is if you have it in a relatively good area by a residence in, you undercut them, you have a washer dryer, you know, is it 6 out of 12 months is it going to be booked, or what would you say?
I'm kind of harsh, you know, landlord scientist. I feel if you have a vacancy, you failed. You're a terrible marketer. Really, you got to bring on your marketing chops. Because you shouldn't have a vacancy. If you got 30 days to fill the place, you should have someone lined up behind it, you know? And there's a number of ways to do it. And especially individuals that are not a big brand, all we need to do is get out from behind our computers and go talk to people. And they're happy to, the local companies who are bringing these people in, they're happy to save money and give their employees more. So I got a bunch of marketing strategies on those type of things.
So as far as like more marketing now is concerned, like what kind of companies should I be talking to? I don't know, who do I go to? Do I go into Starbucks? Like you say, go talk to people. Do I talk to my mom, or my dad? Like who should I be targeting? I want to get business people.
Well, first thing you simply Google the top 10 companies in my city.
Employers.
Yep. Top 10 companies, real stuff like that. And or one technique is to just drive the parking lot of your local extended stay and see whose logos are on the cars.
Hmm.
Right? You have to, if you want to get into this extended stay business, it's tougher to market. It's not like you can just put up an Airbnb listing. You have to get out from behind your computer.
Mm-hmm. You reach out.
Yeah.
You're driving. You're basically driving for dollars.
That's right. And yep.
Mm-hmm. You're looking in the parking lots, kind of being like a little bit of a creeper, but you're not. You're like, oh, I'm not staying here. I'm just getting some logos, right? So, okay, let's say you've pinpointed it down. You got it on your computer. You've got the top 10 employers. Now what? Do you reach out via email? Yeah. Do you recommend calling? Like what would you do there?
You horse race all those techniques, you know. If you blitz into that market, I call it a technique called blitz and pivot. You blitz in, you simply talk to your friends and they'll introduce you, you know, 6 degrees of separation and just like you and I connected. You just Googled me, right? And you found, and you reach out. It's not, it's just the same thing as if you wanted a job. And this is the thing. There is a barrier to entry for the best clients. And those people who just lobbing emails or just putting up, waiting for inbound, you know, just with the Airbnb listing as all they do, they can do outstanding with doing one-, two night stays. They can absolutely do that until the market shifts, you know, until the market economy slows down. But they can do absolutely great. But if you want to do what I consider hands down more profitable on your net income basis, not talking gross, talking your net income basis, you simply use networking skills that you can, just like you're getting a job, you got to use your language.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when you're reaching out to an employer and you're using your networking skills, would you say one of the gatekeepers are like, who would you want to, like, if you are Al, like, ooh, I got the VP on the phone, or like, do you want to get past the secretary to get to the head of HR? Like, who's the person at the company that would be in charge of the booking, right? Like, if I'm like, okay, I'm talking to Amazon, they're like, all right, let me put you through to the marketing department. Like, the marketing guys, like, I need to be talking to the HR resource. They're the ones that are booking. Like, who should I be targeting within that company?
Well, when you ask a question, I often tell people, you know, if you start with your friends who can introduce you, you know, if you don't have, you know, you start with a low hanging fruit. You know, there's already friends that you have that work for corporate America that love you. You start with them and they'll introduce you to their HR manager or to the guy who's in the cubicle right next to them. They already know. You don't have to do a cold call. You just have to work your, you know, let people know what you're doing. And just like you, Matt, if you knew a friend who was doing this and you were sitting right next to someone who was hating their hotel room, you would introduce them.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to know what these people are trying to do. It's just like everything. So cold calling, absolutely, you can absolutely do that. I got some more advanced techniques like using LinkedIn and things like that. But you don't need to start there. You should definitely open your mouth and announce on your Facebook group and your Facebook page what you're doing, and that should be enough.
Is this pretty popular as far as, like, you know, like Airbnb, everybody's starting to, maybe I don't want to say everybody, but you know, the short-term rentals is definitely more popular now. Mm-hmm. Is extended stays, is this still water under the bridge? Nobody really knows about this.
Yeah. Or
is this
still growing? No one really knows about it. They think, they haven't really caught on yet. You know, as digital nomads kick up, you know, and the gig economy kicks up, people, just like your audience, they want to be location independent. And oftentimes they're staying for 3 months here on this assignment and 2 months there on that assignment. And so just like any entrepreneur, I believe you should go we're the stay ahead of the trend.
And
see there's a growing, well, Matt, you know, one thing I do is I stalk these CEOs of these national extended stays, and I read their research. I let them do the research for me, and I just go read their reports and things. And they notice, mm-hmm. you know, there's a growing trend of employers, especially small businesses or mid-sized businesses, that want their staff to go and serve a client in a different state. And that person's family doesn't want to move. They need to take care of their aging grandmother, or they're simply not going to move. And there's a growing trend of people who work in one place and live in the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you know, I'm gonna let Airbnb people fight amongst themselves.
I'm gonna kick
out of that, and I'm just gonna do the most profitable thing, net income wise. Let other people focus on their gross. I'm focusing on my net income with the least amount of work and fatigue. So that's mm-hmm. why I got into extended stays and help other people get into it as well.
And do you find that for a unit, right? Like, let's say you get in, you're talking to the HR or whoever it is, and you know, John Smith stays at that one extended stay that long, or that in at that eight unit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He has a great time. He tells Betty Joe in HR. Do you find that the same company rebooks a lot after they've had like one or two successful visits?
Absolutely. Especially, you know, a lot of companies have training programs.
Mm-hmm.
And people like to not have to reinvent things all the time. So if you and these other hotels are not showing up and trying to build a real relationship with anybody, and most mm-hmm. people, most Airbnb hosts, super hosts, or whoever they are, just like to stay on their smartphone and not never make a human connection. So there you go. You got the opportunity to save someone money, a company money, uh-huh. and their employee shows up to work happier because they don't have a maid service or all kinds of craziness happening around them. They have a place mm-hmm. to park. They're not fatigued. And so that employee is happier, and you don't have to make sure someone got checked in on time. And if they're going to call that night, if mm-hmm. my maid service showed up, did they leave the sheets are ironed, or is there a pillowcase liner on?
Yeah.
You're out of all that. So everyone wins. That's why I like extended stays. And I think they're hands down better.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm thinking about it. I mean, I've had somebody on talking about Airbnb short-term rentals. And that's why I kind of wanted to bring you on because to me, you know, I'm thinking, all right, if let's just say the average short-term rental is in between 3 to 7 days, you know, times that within a month, if you're fully booked, you're at 10 bookings, right? Max, or you less or more, give or take. And so like you're saying, the maid service, the possible heirs are checking in. And not to mention too, the clientele of, let's say, you know, business guys, you know, probably won't have a large party possibly. That's probably less susceptible to happen if you're dealing with business people who are regional travelers. So definitely sounds like a good avenue.
It's harder. You're going to get a mixture of tourists. So it's either going to be tourists or travelers that you're going to be serving. And if you're mm-hmm. doing one, two night stays, weekend stays, there's going to be a lot of touristy people who pay out of pocket. And those mm-hmm. guys have a completely, you know, when you buy your own meal, the food tastes different than when someone else buys your own meal for you.
Mm.
So I want to deal with people who have other people paying for their meals and stay. They have a better attitude, and it's you see, I got this thing all optimized.
Yeah, you got it.
That's a landlord scientist. You know, I'm like, I want to go for the least amount of fray. I don't want to be frayed, and the most net income, not gross income, net income, because that's what helps my family. And mm-hmm. I want a triple win. I want to win. I want my direct customer to win. And I want their customer to win. So it's got to be, I got to help my customer's customer win. And that mm-hmm. type of economy just makes you flow. And that's the type of capitalism that I like, is when, like for you, you're my customer right now. I'm trying to help your audience win.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
So they have, with Airbnb, right? I'll say for short-term rentals, there's people that you own the unit, right? And then they, you know, whatever, they place it on Airbnb. Then there's other people that are approaching other landlords and saying like, hey, I will pay you, but I want to manage it, kind of like zero money down kind of thing.
Right, right.
I'll take everything off the top. Is that applicable to extended?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. So it is absolutely those housing entrepreneurs, and the whole definition of who's a tenant and who's a landlord is morphing, and it will continue to morph in the future. So it's not so clean cut anymore. It's just like who's the client and who's the customer. I mean, who's the client and who's the company, as companies bring their clients on for advisory. It's just morphing. Things are just morphing. The thing to focus on to kind of clean up all these, the differences, is staying 1 month at a hotel costs you a certain amount of money. Let's say X, and the market rate for a rental is much less. Why? There's always this margin between the two that you can capture, and everyone can capture that as long as the hotels cost more than the month at a rental. There's that margin. So you can, no matter what, even if you're in New York and you have high rental monthly rents, the hotels are still charging more. So there's that margin that can be harvested. So because of that, you can pay someone, you know, I can come to one of your rentals and I can pay you full market rent, and you're happy, and I can keep your place looking better than a normal tenant because I have to, right? And I still can make a profit on top of that that's less than the local extended stay hotel. And I can just capture that, you know, that's the oil. I can set up a drill rig to capture that oil right there, that margin.
For sure. Has anybody ever reached out to you trying to lease out one of your places to do, like, reverse it on you? Be like, hey, I'd like to try Airbnb.
No, has anybody tried that? No, they haven't. I got most of the places I own and things like that, I've all switched over to furnished rentals. Yeah, I have a couple of long-term rentals, but I think the furnished rentals, specifically furnished, whether you're doing extended stays or short-term rentals, I feel those are safer than having a normal, traditional, unfurnished landlord rental.
Why is that?
Because if you have a furnished rental, then you can automatically charge 30% more than market rents, because you're renting the furniture out as well. And then if you, with the furnishings, you can do, I call it flexible term rentals. Airbnb is kind of your flex your terms. And that helps you make about 3 to 5 times more when you're doing extended stays or short-term rentals. And then you can aim for corporate rentals with those furnishings, and you can make about 7 to 10 times on net income basis. So if you fail at doing corporate rentals, you can fall back to doing Airbnb. And if you fail at that, you can fall back to doing furnished rentals. And if you're doing furnished rentals and you fail to do that, you can fall back. You know, traditional landlording should always be your safety net. Now, if you're doing traditional rentals and the economy falls down, you're just vacant. There is no safety net below traditional landlording. It is so that's why it's the most risky position to be in, because there's nothing but vacancy and financial loss if you fail at landlording.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you're saying extended stay doesn't work, you can go to short term. If it doesn't work at short term, then
long-term furnished.
And then from there you can go from being a landlord.
Okay, that
makes sense.
And landlording, that's where the blood is. There's nothing. And also, it's the least profitable.
For
that's
sure.
Why, that's why. Termites. That's why I'm like, come on. It's the least. If the economy crashes, people lose their homes, right? They either go mm-hmm. to a motel or a furnished rental.
Mm-hmm.
That's the safest place to be, is a furnished rental.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you. So if you're doing the extended stays and you know, like you're saying, you've done your research, you've been staking out residents in, and are you typically looking for a studio or are you looking for just like one bedroom? Because obviously you're not looking for a house. You're not looking for like, is there a certain square footage you're looking for? Like, what would you
say? Matt B, let me set straight. So this is what's great. This is a good question you asked, because you have your landlord hat firmly on. But follow me here.
Yeah.
We're looking for cash flow. And don't be insulted by this, but cash flow is the difference between your income and your expenses.
Yep.
And those expenses, not how many bedrooms or bathrooms,
uh-huh.
It's expenses.
Uh-huh.
So whatever that financing on that package, you want to make sure there's a margin between your income and expenses, not studio, not single family homes. So you need to know what your income is.
Uh-huh.
And that's why you need to be able to target, hey, am I going after a group of construction workers that are going to stay in six different hotels, and I put them into a 3-bed, 2-bath? Is that who I'm going after? Or am I going after a single business person, and this is how much they can afford? You know, I start with there and you work your way backwards.
I love that.
And if you can get a 3-bed, 2-bath for the right expense, mm-hmm. financing, if you structure your financing so that you have a margin, then you're good.
Yeah. I mean, we always say when we're buying apartment buildings, like, know your exit strategy going in, like,
yeah.
what's your holding period, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. Like, so yeah, just reverse engineering, your thought process. Very cool.
That's the way to do it.
Love it. Love it. Al, so if somebody wants to learn more about this program and you, where can they go about finding this information?
Well, you know, I have a website for extended stays. It's called extendedstaylandlord.com. They can get my coaching and training. It's very interactive. Has a lot of great stuff in it, and a great community to support people. So that's probably when all of us come together in our private Facebook group and everything, we can solve just about anything. And then, of course, they can reach me at al@leadinglandlord.com. Leading Landlord is my main blog clearinghouse where I do all my landlord science and different experiments, like working on preventative maintenance for rental owners, because that's you can spend like $1 and save $200, you know, and that directly affects your net income by being proactive about your maintenance, because you know you're going to get a hair clogging, you know you're going to get a tree roots in your sewer line, you got to take steps to not be surprised that you got maintenance.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all those things and documenting them and doing the science behind it and checking how it affects your net income is what I do.
Very cool. Very cool. I want to close it out with the final three closing questions. I'll make sure to include all that information in the show notes there for you. First question I have for you is, what is your favorite book to regift?
My favorite book to gift is anything related to cats. My daughter.
Cats?
I don't like cats. No, we have one that lives in our house, and my daughters like to tease me about that because he's a non-paying resident. And anything related to cats, I'm going to regift it. Cat jokes, cat pictures, anything.
But okay. Yeah, we're moving into a new house at the end of the month, and I was like, I kind of want to get a cat to like leave outside and have them catch mice. Apparently, you squashed that dream there.
All right. Hey, man, whatever sparks joy for you, whatever sparks joy.
I've never had a cat.
Yeah, go for it.
Like, this is like the time to like go get a cat.
It. Yeah, so, yeah, do it. You should.
All right, I'll send you a cat Christmas card.
And I'll re-gift it.
Oh, damn. There we go. All right. Second question is, what is a pain point or weakness you face right now in your business?
Pain point is, following up with my VA. I came pound out a checklist, and you want to keep the VAs busy, especially you want to keep them busy. So sometimes I I have daily reports now, and I keep experimenting with that. I mean, you were telling me about your spreadsheet and checklists and things.
Yeah.
You got to fine tune it and work your way. So I'm doing that. It kind of it forces you to grow as a leader and a delegator. So I'm going through the growth pains of doing repetitive stuff, so following up with people. I don't like following up with people with people that I pay. Yeah. Marketing's different, but yeah. So I'm learning that.
Nice. All right. Third question is, if you can live anywhere abroad for 1 year, where would you live and why?
I want to try Hawaii. Yeah.
Not abroad. Oh. It's got to be abroad.
Okay. Abroad would be then, Greenland.
Greenland.
Yeah. Let's see what that's like. I hear it's pretty small and not pretty, it's pretty popular. I guess the president wants it. So
There you go. Awesome. Well, very cool. Well, Al, I appreciate you being on the show. I know the audience is.
Oh, thanks for having
me. I know the audience is going to appreciate all the tidbits that you shared and take a lot of valuable information there for you. So appreciate it. We'll catch you on the next go round, my friend.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, guys. Congratulations on listening to the whole episode so far. But now I want you to take it one step further. Please head on over to MatthewBaltzell.com/discover to schedule a free 15-minute call with me and tell me about what is a pain point you're facing right now in real estate, and I'll create an episode around that there for you. Peace.